cultural heritage, or symbol of division. Just ahead, a look at the history and strong emotions surrounding the Confederate flag. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live at 9, and now catch our daily podcast on iTunes. And just ahead, we want your calls as demands grow to take down the Confederate battle flag in South Carolina. Where do you stand? 549-2937. Then later, celebrating St. Augustine's rich Spanish heritage that's in our America's First City. Plus, training the next generation of workforce leaders with Year Up, a brand new program on the First Coast. We'll tell you about it. All of that ahead. But first this morning, amid growing criticism on Monday, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley called for the removal of the Confederate battle flag from her state's capital after the massacre of nine black members of an historic congregation in Charleston last week. Take a listen.
The hate-filled murderer who massacred our brothers and sisters in Charleston has a sick and twisted view of the flag. In no way does he reflect the people in our state who respect and in many ways revere it. At the same time, for many others in South Carolina, the flag is a deeply offensive symbol of a brutally oppressive past. The murderer, now locked up in Charleston, said he hoped his actions would start a race war. We have an opportunity to show that not only was he wrong, but that just the opposite is happening. My hope is that by removing a symbol that divides us, we could move forward as a state in harmony, and we can honor the nine blessed souls who are now in heaven.
And that's South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. Now, the confessed gunman in the shooting spree, Dylan Roof, used the Confederate symbol to represent his white supremacist beliefs. So, almost exactly 150 years after the end of the Civil War, once again, the Confederate battle flag has become a divisive symbol of this nation's enduring struggle with the legacies of slavery and segregation. But the stars and bars also remains an emblem of deep-seated cultural pride that many Southerners say transcends the ugly histories of the past. And here in our area, Northeast Florida, the flag is a symbol, evokes strong emotions. This morning, we're discussing them and taking your calls as we welcome a great group. Former Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
George Young with the local chapter of the NAACP, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And David Nelson, he represents the local chapter of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. David, thanks for joining us.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
And we're already getting your calls. We want to know where you stand on this matter. As the governor of South Carolina says it's time to take down the Confederate flag from her state's capital, 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect, email and tweet the show, or you can weigh in on our Facebook page. Mr. Young, let's begin with you. The National NAACP had long called for this flag to be removed from the Columbia State House grounds. So this morning, what's your reaction?
My reaction is very simple. The NAACP opposes anything that they consider a violation of one's civil rights. And the people of South Carolina and Mississippi have been subjected to this flag that was not a part of their flag since the Civil War. It became a part of their flag after the Supreme Court made a decision that we should integrate our educational system. And when you look back, it's not like the flag was there all the time. It's like in 1956 or 1955, Georgia decided to add the flag to make the flag a part of their flag, the Southern battle flag. And then other states followed, like South Carolina and Mississippi. To continue to put something before people that is hurtful to me is just a violation of human rights, not just civil rights, but my human rights. If you're going to intentionally hurt me, it just doesn't make sense to me.
David Nelson with Sons of Confederate Veterans. Nikki Haley acknowledged that hurt and pain in her comments yesterday. At the same time, she talked about how the flag is a symbol of pride for so many. Can you share your thoughts on that side of this?
Well, it is a symbol of pride. And whether or not the flag is flying or not, it's not going to stop evil. Evil will happen when evil happens. The flag does not represent what that young man believed it to be represent. He was wrong in what he thought. He was certainly wrong in what he did. We shouldn't blame the emblem for that. The emblem does not stand for that.
Matt Carlucci, as a white male Southerner who grew up with this symbol all around you, you have some feelings that you wanted to share too.
Well, first of all, I know both the gentlemen here and greatly respect their views, but I found the statements by Governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley, very refreshing because they were direct, they were honest. I grow tired of hearing politicians dance around the issue. I'm sure that I probably have, on my mother's side, relatives that fought for the Confederacy. And had I lived back then, I would have honored them for what they gave their lives for. But by the same token, it seems from my little bit of research that the Confederate battle flag, as I understand it, has resurged during the 60s and the Civil Rights Movement as kind of a protest. And, I just think it has become something that's revered by many, but it's also a divider. And anything that divides this country, I don't think is good. I think it tears down from within. And we should rally around things that build us up as one. And so to fly the flag on any public property, I just think is not thinking of the whole, not thinking of everyone. And so I was greatly encouraged by what I read in Nikki Haley's comments. I thought they were tremendous. I thought it took courage. And I'm quite tired of hearing politicians dance around it.
Let me ask you both, George and David, as a follow-up. Politicians who are currently campaigning for president in 2016 have all been asked where they stand on this, including former Florida Governor Jeb Bush. He pointed out that he removed the Confederate battle flag from Tallahassee State Capitol more than 10 years ago. Other politicians have had varying responses. Let me ask you, David and George, as this reaches the presidential campaign, how has that landed with you?
Well, I see it as a historical question, not a political question, and I don't think that should even come up in the campaign. What should come up in the campaign is about jobs and how we can get this country forward, and that's just a question they don't need to be asking those candidates. I can understand, too, because this is a South Carolina issue. If it was a South Carolina candidate pertaining to the flag at the Capitol grounds, sure, I'll have a problem with them. And they did. They talked to the governor and they've talked to some South Carolina representatives, but certainly a South Carolina, issue. But to ask the presidential candidates that, no, that's a waste of time.
George Young.
Well, it's not really a waste of time when you ask a man his opinion about something if you really want to know what his opinion is. But when a man sidesteps a question, that means he must have a reason for sidestepping the question. To say that I removed the Confederate battle flag in Florida 10 years ago, but then to say, well, if you believe that it should have been removed in Florida, then you should believe it should be removed everywhere. So to say that, well, that's a problem for South Carolina, is kind of like taking a sidestep. And then coming back a week later and saying, kudos to the governor for wanting to remove the flag. You didn't make a decision the first time, so it's kind of like you buying it. Oh, now all of a sudden I want to jump on this wagon and ride because it comes from the governor instead of having your own decision.
And the lines are jammed as we discuss this hot topic on the show right now. Let's go to your calls, Mark on the West Side. Go ahead, Mark. Thanks for calling.
I've been waiting for this topic for years. I'm just sad that it has to be brought about by the actions of some person who doesn't even deserve the title of person. But I'm a multi-generation Southerner. I've got relatives that were in the Civil War, one that even died at a battle during the Civil War. But, Southerners are right when they say this is an issue of heritage. But it's a bad heritage. It's an evil heritage. You would call, people that take up arms against the government of which they are part of, they're traitors. There can be no other. And why you would want to revere the memory of evil, I don't understand. We'd get a little uncomfortable if we saw a group of Germans celebrating some family reunion, flying the Nazi flag and doing the goose step and the Nazi salute. And they would say, no, this isn't evil. This is heritage. That's crap. It's a horrible, horrible period of our time. We did horrible, horrible things to people. The Confederacy brought this about, and the number one reason the Confederacy was brought about was the continuation of slavery. And, you know, Southerners are always talked about how polite we are and our sense of manners. Well, it's just rude. We've subjugated a people and used that symbol for years as a symbol of fear and intimidation. You know, we should stop that. We should come together and say, you know, this isn't probably a good idea to do this anymore.
All right, that's Mark. Yeah, Mark on the West Side. Thanks, Mark. On the other hand, David French, staff writer and Gulf War veteran at the conservative magazine National Review, wrote, "The battle flag means many things for different people. Flying it over monuments to the Confederate war dead is simply history. They should no more remove it than they should chisel away the words on the granite or bulldoze the memorials themselves." Your thoughts?
Well, the fellow on the West Side, you know, certainly has a strong opinion, and perhaps someday he and I can sit down and have a long conversation, about that. There were some fundamental things that weren't historically accurate, and what do you say in that? And I'd love
such as.
Oh my goodness! Well, the war was not fought over slavery, and the flag does not represent hate. And the people like myself, I mean, who do, respect the flag, why are we not included and inclusive in being, representative? This will please a lot of people, but it will also displease, a lot of people. So, why is that fair?
Matt Carlucci.
Oh, I have two comments. I think perhaps the flag meant something different back then than it does today. While the flag did not kill those church members, we all understand that. It's simple to understand. But to me, the flag, the young man displaying it, sort of fueled his hatred. Okay, so that's an issue. Number two, as a councilman back 13, 14 years ago, I had a gentleman who lived in a predominantly African-American neighborhood and flew the Confederate flag. And to say that it caused a stir, to say that it caused a real problem for me, because you get drug into it as a councilman. You get drug into everything as a councilman. And so I went to the man's house to ask him if he would remove the flag. I didn't call any organization. I went personally. And he eventually did, but he said, "I'm doing it because I'm scared of my neighbors, and I want to use it as a defense mechanism." And so that told me right there he was using that symbol as, stay away from my property because, that's my defense, and I won't go any farther than that. But I walked away with kind of a sick feeling about just exactly why he was using that. So, museums, it's fine. But I go back to the resurgence of the flag came about in, I think, the late 40s, in the 50s and 60s. And I tread carefully on this because I know Dave Nelson is a greater historian on anything with Civil War than I am. But my reading shows that it was used as somewhat of a protest symbol towards the integration of schools and so forth.
And that was your point, George, I believe you said.
Correct.
And so, lots of calls. Let's go to Doran on the West Side. Go ahead, Doran. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I wanted to say that I feel like Mr. Carlucci has represented my point of view very well. I would just expand by asking all of your well-meaning listeners to consider those in particular who feel like they have a right and should display the Confederate flag, to consider that this issue goes beyond rights. I mean, clearly we have a First Amendment right, and that right, I would think, would protect anyone's right to fly that flag. But I think the larger issue is one of empathy. Can you see the other person's side? You know, on one end, I can understand having family members who might have fought in the Civil War and wanting to recognize and honor their history. But at the same time, can the others consider that, hey, this flag has been utilized by the KKK. It's been utilized by other hate groups, white supremacist groups of various kinds. So there's a lot of baggage attached to that flag. And can your well-meaning listeners consider how it might make someone else feel? I mean, everyone has a right to what they do at their home if they want to fly the flag in their private residence or when they do historical recognition, but to particularly have it in a public place like a state capitol, it sends a polarizing message. It's clear just from the conversation today that there are at least two sides on this. So can we see the other man's side, and can we vote for, and can we lean toward being empathetic? I'll say something else very, very quickly. There are little things that go with having a predominantly white culture, and I think this is one where it's sometimes harder to think about the minority group and consider how they may be deeply offended and wounded because they have a history with this flag, just like maybe some historical families in the South have as well.
Alrighty.
So that's my comment.
Thank you so much for that. George, then David, your thoughts to his comments.
My grandfather was born in St. Matthews, South Carolina. And, of course, he met my grandmother there, who was closer to your complexion than mine. But I just think that South Carolina was the first state to secede from the Union. And I'm still wondering if they ever got back in, because they have had this history of racism in South Carolina. I mean, terrible racism for so long, and it's continued, and it's even continuing today. Because they were asked to take the flag down, they got even, they became even more hard-headed about it, and it's like, you're not going to make me do this. And instead of, you know, when you hear Court Spurrier come through the state and say, let's take this flag down, because he's trying to do things athletically in South Carolina, and they refuse him. But they want to have, you know, black athletes represent the state of South Carolina and Clemson and their other schools. It's ridiculous for them to continue to keep that flag there, because it is separating people. You got problems in Myrtle Beach. You have problems in the islands up there. I mean, because the flag is a divider.
David Nelson, as Nikki Haley pointed out, I wanted to get your thoughts because, as you said, you see this as an issue primarily affecting South Carolinians. But just judging by the reaction we're getting, it's something that Americans all across the country, as one caller said, this symbol has a lot of baggage on both sides. So as you hear this feedback coming in, how are you reacting?
Well, I understand the baggage, and so does the Sons Confederate Veterans, of course. And we've done two things. We have asked publicly, we've condemned other groups from using that flag. That flag is the logo of our organization, has been since 1896. And the other organizations that have used it, we have asked them not to use it, and we've deplored their activities, you know, with that flag. We also understand with the how some people are offended about that, and we have gone to great lengths to, just like I'm doing this morning, I'm talking about, I'm trying to put some information, you know, out there that might give you a different knowledge about the flag. So we're very good with our literature and our education, seminars and so forth, and talking about it and passing out literature and so forth. But the big thing is we have publicly asked those groups not to do it. We certainly don't support those groups, and none of those members of those groups are members of our groups. We do not have any hate people in our organization.
Let's go now to Cindy in Jack's Beach. Go ahead, Cindy. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just want to applaud Governor Haley for her action yesterday. And I just wanted to comment that I always find it astounding when people try to indicate that the Civil War was not about slavery and that this flag is not about slavery. That is what the Civil War was about. The Southern states wanted to keep slavery. The Northern states did not. So basically, that's what it's about. And if you'd like to rewrite history, that's up to you. But we all know the truth. And this flag represents a very dark and embarrassing and horrifying history. And I think it needs to go away, period. And I think it's great that we're having this conversation. 150 years ago, it should have gone away a long time ago. That's my comment. Thank you.
Cindy, thanks. David and his organization don't agree with that that historical narrative, Matt, which is why we continue to see this divide in this country right up until today.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say this quickly. Dave Nelson is one of the kindest, most decent people I've known. I've known him for so many years. So you couldn't have had a better person to represent his view of this. And he's very renowned in his understanding of the Civil War. And I think the Civil War, my opinion is, it was about slavery, but it was also about states' rights. There was a lot of things that were dividing this country at that time. But slavery, no doubt, was a big part of it. I want to make another comment, though. I think what Governor Nikki Haley did yesterday, and I know nothing about this lady, but I think she took, you know, sometimes it takes a politician, me included, when you're facing a political issue that's hot, that you might be a little bit scared of. Sometimes you got to cross the line. You have to step across it and make a stand. And she did that. And I think that's probably going to be one of the most important things that's been done in this country for a while. I cannot applaud her more for what she did. She crossed the line. It might have taken her a while, but you know, it takes all of us a while to cross a line and change our beliefs and come to conclusions that might have been different from our previous beliefs.
George.
When you consider the fact that in 1998, the incumbent governor lost an election because he wanted to remove his flag, Nikki Haley took a very, very high risk. The fact that she only had, 5 days to make this decision and come to the conclusion that she did, that it would be best for the state of South Carolina. Her being an American Indian woman, and basically a female in this country, and to be the governor of the state of South Carolina, but to be an Indian, an American Indian, a Native Indian, and win the governorship of South Carolina was a test in the first place. And then to take a chance to step out and say, we need to remove this flag. That was a very, very high risk.
And David, let me ask you this as well. What's your reaction been to news developing out of all of these events that now Walmart, the nation's largest retailer, says it will no longer sell the Confederate battle flag? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I was kind of surprised when I heard that. Walmart took that step here locally back in 1989. And I wasn't even aware of them having a website. I didn't even know if they sold stuff online, to tell you the truth. But I think that's just, you know, them wanting the publicity and jumping on the bandwagons. That appears to be how things are going. And, you know, they just want to be, you know, part of that train, I guess.
And, Matt, let's close with you because we are short on time now. I feel that we've had an excellent discussion with robust points of view represented. Luck of the draw, you get the final thoughts. So your thoughts.
Well, my final thoughts are this. To bring three people in and to have a civil discussion about this issue is pretty amazing. I think it's healthy. I respect everybody here. And I just think that at the end of the day, the Confederate flag had its place, but in today's world, it's just a little bit too much of a divider to be flown on public property. I think is more destructive and does not unite us. It divides us, and we've got to get away from things that divide us. Our country is strongest when we're strong from within. and we don't want to get torn down from division from within our ranks, but we want to build up strong from within our ranks, and that is by discussions like what we've had here this morning. I feel good about what we've all talked about, and your listeners are great.
Well, you guys are great, too. So thank you all for appearing on such short notice. We really appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We were joined by George Young, vice president with the local chapter of the NAACP, David Nelson, representing the local chapter of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, and former city councilman Matt Carlucci, all in studio. Much more still ahead later. A new way to approach workforce development in Jacksonville. We'll tell you about Year Up, a brand new initiative on the First Coast. But up next, celebrating the Spanish heritage of St. Augustine. That's in America's First City in a moment.
Every day on Morning Edition, it's the news you can't do without.
This morning, we've been looking at what's happening.
There's conservatism, libertarianism, environmentalism, religion.
We're not props. We're just everyday people.
The crowd, the joy, the sense of hope.
Historic.
Listen to the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
The great online auction is back. June 19th through 29th. Shop from the comfort of your home and find exciting items at a fraction of retail. From barbecue to vacation getaways, we have something for everyone at every budget. All proceeds benefit WJCT. Log on to auction.wjct.org and start shopping today.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
New name, new look. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Morning keynote speaker, mental health advocate Jessie Close, who wants to change how people talk and think about mental illness. An ambassador for Bring Change to Mind, a not-for-profit organization founded by Jessie's sister, actress Glenn Close. Jessie fights stigma and misunderstandings to create a clearer picture of mental disorders. Good for you. Girls Day Out is hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to wjct.org/goodforyou.
On the next Fresh Air, Noah Charney takes us into the world of art forgery. Before Michelangelo was famous, Charney says he was a forger. He sculpted a marble statue called Sleeping Eros.
And it was buried in a garden and dug up, broken, repaired, and sold as an antiquity.
Forgers, it turns out, are a crafty and colorful crew. His book is The Art of Forgery. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, right now we're going to go a bit off the beaten path to celebrate the First Coast Spanish heritage. And of course, you can really get a taste of that in St. Augustine. As part of our new series, America's First City, we're taking a closer look with SimplySt.Augustine.com blogger Allie O. She is on the line now. Hi, good morning, Allie.
Good morning, Melissa.
So as St. Augustine prepares to celebrate its 450th commemoration, you want to talk about a little off-the-beaten-path way to celebrate the area's Spanish heritage, and there's a lot on your list, correct?
That is so true. There's, 450 years worth of discoveries in St. Augustine. You want me to just share a couple
Absolutely.
Of my favorites? Well, you know, there are common things like the Castillo de San Marcos. Everybody knows the fort, and everybody loves it. Fourth grade, we've all done it, right? Anyone who grew up here. But there is another lesser-known fort just a little bit south, another 20 minutes south of St. Augustine, a fort called Fort Matias. And Fort Matias is fantastic because it's on its own little island. You take a ferry over. It's just a great experience. So there are lots of little gems like that hidden along the first coast that we would love you to check out.
Right. Now, as you said, Fort Matanzas is only accessible by ferry, so people might not be as aware of it, but it is a free attraction.
It is. It's free. The National Park Service does an amazing job curating it. Of course, it's clean. There are boardwalks, there are restrooms, and it's right across the street from a public access to the beach. So you can really make a fun day of time down at Fort Matanzas.
How does the fort down there differ from the Castillo, which is right in the historic district in St. Augustine?
That's a great question. It's much, much smaller, and it's similar construction. But one thing I love about Fort Matanzas is that when you climb up through this very narrow little hole on a slightly rickety wooden ladder, you get a view of exactly what explorers would have seen and pioneers would have seen, you know, hundreds of years ago. There is marshland, there is the waterway, and then on the other side of the barrier island, you can see the ocean. So it's just a little glimpse of the, you know, the beauty that Florida has always had. And it's a little different than what you might see at the Castillo, where, you know, you look across the way and you see homes and it's still gorgeous, still see dolphin, but I just love that kind of glimpse of the way it's always been.
Sure. The history education, especially if you take your kids, is second to none. Now, when it comes to cuisine, you can enjoy a taste of Spain all over the historic district, but you have a few recommendations. Can you share them?
I would be happy to. I actually put a blog up yesterday that covers all of the years of St. Augustine's history from the time of first settlement 450 years ago, a little bit more than that, to present day. And so I had a lot of fun pairing up different restaurants that were iconic and represented different time periods in St. Augustine's history. But if you want a taste of Spanish heritage, I send people to the Taberna del Caballo. It's right on St. George Street. It has little kerosene lamps on the tables in the evening. It is open air. They usually have a Spanish guitarist playing on the patio. It just really is a feel of what a taberna would have been like. And they have tapas-style meals and hamburgers for those of us who aren't as adventurous.
Right. And if you get out of St. Augustine, of course, another hidden gem in our area, it's a French settlement, actually, Fort Caroline.
That's right. That's right. Up on the coast of the St. John's River in Fort Caroline neighborhood is the fort where the French settled. And actually, I just love learning, you know, kind of like you were talking earlier, there are always so many facets of any history story. And so the Fort Matanzas, there was a battle there, and it was fought between the Spanish and the French. The French actually sailed down from Fort Caroline up in Jacksonville. So, yeah, you can go up there and walk the grounds. There's no standing fort anymore, although they do have some wooden palisades in the place that it was. But what better way to learn about our history than actually walking where it took place? You can always get a book. You can always read blogs. You can go online, and those are all helpful. But walking where an event happened, there's just nothing to replace that.
And it's really nice to get to talk to you, Allie, because your blog, Simply St. Augustine, is a delight. And
you have
a lot to talk about, especially lately because of all the excitement around the 450th. Tell us a little bit about the growth of Simply St. Augustine.
Simply St. Augustine started about 5 years ago. I just was kind of tired of reading negative reviews on TripAdvisor, actually. Too many people were just, you know, only saw the tourist strip. And there's so much more. We have just such a gem right here on the first coast. We don't have to travel, you know, hundreds of miles to get a taste of American history. So I started writing about attractions, about restaurants, about even state parks and nature walks, just anything to help people enjoy their stay the local way. That's kind of my little tagline. And locals love living right here on the first coast. So it's been a lot of fun just kind of exploring our area, and it's something we can do as a family. So I absolutely love it, and I'm happy to be an ambassador of St. Augustine.
And what's it like lately living there as the world's eyes increasingly are preparing to turn to the nation's oldest city?
Yes, it's busier and busier. So I just recommend when people come down to be patient. And yes, things are going to be busy. Yes, there will be lines. Yes, there will be parking challenges. So, you know, get there early. There are still lots of ways, though, to enjoy it without having to deal with the crowd. Actually, my family is headed down this afternoon, so we like to go midweek and be able to enjoy the city. But then as it gets closer to the 450th, as you know, there's so much planned, including live concerts for several days and fireworks. And we're excited to celebrate with, you know, how thousands of our closest friends celebrate have some birthday cake and enjoy the not only the history in the past, but also the amazing city that St. Augustine is today.
She's blogger Allie O, and the website is simplystaugustine.com. Check it out to learn all about what's doing in the nation's oldest city. Allie, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks.
And we're back in a moment.
America's First City is sponsored by the St. Augustine 450th Commemoration and Tapestry Exhibition.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where local artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit now through July 31st. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Relax around the clock with the music of your life. Playing great music from Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald to James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, and more. Relax Radio, WJCT, 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
Never know how much I love you.
It may seem like just a basketball court, but this Baltimore rec center provides something vital to a neighborhood plagued by drugs and violence.
We are mom, dad, aunt, cousin. They come here to get what they don't have at home.
A visit to the Lillian S. Jones Recreation Center later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Well, finally this hour, the issue of workforce development is really top of mind for this area's business leadership, especially lately with plans for a new STEM hub in our area and lots of other initiatives. Not only that, Jacksonville is also the latest metropolitan area to start a chapter of Year Up. That's a national nonprofit program partnering with local business communities to meet their needs for skilled labor. The program accepts a limited number of students aged 18 to 24 who have their GED and a desire to advance their skill set, but need help and resources to do so. We're going to hear all about Year Up now with Executive Director Robin Watson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Brittany Anthony, Director of Development.
Good morning.
And Tiffany McDonald, Associate Director of Partner Relations. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Robin, let's begin with you. Year Up is new to the First Coast. Tell us all about it.
So Year Up is a nonprofit organization that is... total mission is to bridge the opportunity divide. So we're interested in the 6 million disenfranchised youth, what we call opportunity youth, and the 13 million jobs that need to be fulfilled. And so we chose Jacksonville because Jacksonville has a very large poverty. As average, about 50% of people in Jacksonville are in poverty. And so we hope to make a big dent in that with Opportunity Youth. So our partnership is with Florida FSCJ, which is Florida State College at Jacksonville, and we're excited to be here.
And Tiffany, you're bridging an important gap. Since January this year, dozens of students have gone through training, everything from office management, manufacturing, telecommunications, lots of different opportunities, right?
Yes, absolutely. We've been extremely fortunate with some of our inaugural partners. So we have Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, we have Ally, and a lot of really prominent corporations here in Jacksonville that have really stepped up to the plate and understand the value in having that pipeline of entry-level talent, and then also the CSR, corporate social responsibility portion also.
Sure. And Brittany, big companies, EverBank, Bank of America, lots of big names, Citibank signing on to this effort, and you want more to come on as well.
Absolutely. So EverBank is amazing because they are actually one of our first local partners. A lot of this came down from a national standpoint because the brand was very familiar. However, now that we are in the market, we want the ability to let everyone know that we're here, and we're actually having our ribbon cutting on Thursday. So that we're letting the Jacksonville community know that between us and FSCJ and the Jax Chamber, Jax USA partnership, we're here.
And Brittany, tell us a little bit more about that. Somebody talk. I don't care who talks.
Okay. So I can share a little bit more.
Okay, that's fine.
All right. So basically, we are here to in Jacksonville to make the difference and to bridge that opportunity gap and in our partnership. So our partnership is about the academic acumen of students and giving them the skill set to be able to perform entry-level professional jobs and then to turn around and in our program, they're put through what we call professional skills, where we really spend time on the soft and the hard skills, as well as the technical acumen to be able to meet the market demand.
What are the biggest challenges in matching up kids that and young people that want to work with companies and meeting their needs?
Perception. I mean, you know, Opportunity Youth is the perception is that they are not ready to work. So we spend a lot of time changing that perception by requiring professional dress. So all of our students wear, they wear a shirt and tie and suits, and it's business professional every single day, even through the academic coursework. So they go to FSCJ in business attire every day. And so we think that modeling behaviors, high expectation and high support, allow you to actualize your life. If you are not, and you know, we need the Jacksonville community to have higher expectations of ourselves in relationship to Opportunity Youth so that they're able to actualize themselves. And we can.
Sure. And Brittany Anthony, tell us a little bit about your piece of this.
So I'm with Operation New Hope, and we're most known for Jacksonville-based Ready for Work program. A new program we're focusing on is Fresh Start, which is the same population. It's that very challenged, under-educated, underemployed, not necessarily ex-offenders, but on the pipeline. So we're wanting to put them through the Ready for Work program, which is a very comprehensive year-long program to prepare them. They're going to be required to get their GEDs, they'll be required to go through vocational training, and they'll be placed in a job. And we're hoping to be a feeder with Year Up so that we can get them careers and get them off that pipeline in prison.
And you know what, Tiffany, as the new mayor begins his term in office at City Hall, Lene Curry has talked about bringing back the Jacksonville Journey anti-crime initiative that put into place during the John Payton years some of these types of initiatives. How do you see Year Up having a positive impact on helping bring down our local crime rate and finding employment for folks?
Well, when Mayor Incumbent came to our office, the Ready for Work office, to tour, he said that before the election. You know, he really wants to figure out a way to bring this funding because he knows these programs are working in Jacksonville. And let's focus on what's working and getting them refunded. So we're actually on his transitional team. So we have a meeting this afternoon to talk about that.
Interesting. So, Robin Watson, you're new to the job. And it sounds like you're getting thrown into the deep end of the pool right away.
Yes. It's exciting, though.
Yeah.
Jacksonville's a great community.
Now, you moved here from Nashville.
Nashville, Tennessee, correct.
Specifically for this opportunity.
Yes. I mean, I view this opportunity as this will be the most amazing life work I'll ever do. I mean, the opportunity to really make an impact and to model behaviors. What we do know is that people are hired for skills and abilities, but they are fired for behaviors. And so we have come up with a revolutionary perspective on how to engage young adults between 18 and 24 and help them actualize a professional job. And it's an amazing partnership. We had our first group of students go to Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, yesterday, and then we had lunch with the managers, and they were absolutely stunned at the professionalism and their questions. And we have this amazing culture, a feedback culture, where, you know, we give honest feedback, we correct grammar. I mean, we really, as a fundamental value of Europe, we believe that if you hold people to high expectations mm-hmm. and with high support, that they will and can be exceptional professionals.
And so with all that said, Tiffany, there is an event on Thursday, correct?
Absolutely. So we are celebrating our ribbon cutting, and that's going to be at FSCJ downtown at 10 a.m. We're so excited. We had a bit of a launch in December, but we really want the Jacksonville community to know that we're here. Robin's here. She's taken her place. And so we welcome everyone to come out, say hello to some of our students, or even come tour the campus at any time.
It's Year Up, and it's new in town, an exciting new initiative, getting businesses partnered up with young people, developing our local workforce, and we hope you'll keep us posted on your efforts. Thanks, all three of you, for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Executive Director Robin Watson, Brittany Anthony with Operation New Hope, Tiffany McDonald representing Year Up. Again, that event is Thursday, 10 a.m. At FSCJ. Thanks so much for listening to the show today. Thanks, and we'll be back tomorrow. That is our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Make sure to catch our daily podcast. It's now up on iTunes. Emails with feedback, questions, comments, always go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Next on Diane Rehm, Greece offers its creditors what's been called a last-ditch bailout plan, the latest on the debt crisis and its ongoing threat to the Eurozone. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. We'll be right back.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.